My name's Ryan Sim. I'm an Anglican priest in the Diocese of Toronto here, and I'm leading a church plant in Ajax, a bedroom community just to the east of Toronto. I give you my website there. It's my blog, and I'll have my notes from this presentation up there. Let's say Monday. Just give me a day off. So we'll say Monday. You'll be able to find my notes up there and some links to resources that might be of interest for you. Just to save paper, that's all going to be there. And what I lead is something called RedeemTheCommute.com. It's something that brings together my experience and passion for technology with my passion for church planting and making disciples. So it's a mixture of the two. I'll introduce it to you bit by bit as we go through the workshop, but I'll start it off with a news clip from about 2 weeks ago. It was my 15 seconds of fame, and it'll kind of explain what Redeem the Commute is all about. Assuming it works. Took about a half hour to film, but it ended up being about 15 seconds.
Some estimates tell us...
Oh. Once again, you should be nervous if you're here to learn about technology. All right.
Some estimates tell us gridlock costs the GTA about six...
Yes, not looking good. Thankfully, I can fix that. And somebody from St. Paul's in the room. They didn't turn on my sound yet.
The GTA about $6 billion a year in lost productivity. What's harder to calculate is the...
Okay, we'll fix that. Oh, Anna, thank you. I don't know which. I'll tell you what number we are. Number two. Can you turn up number two?
Some estimates tell us gridlock costs the GTA about $6 billion a year in lost productivity. What's harder to calculate is the human cost. Stephen D'Souza is looking at the impact on one family in part two of our series, Gridlock City.
Let's go. I got to leave in 9 minutes. You guys.
Before her commute, Sean Gibson squeezes every moment she can with her two sons.
Good luck on the test.
Okay. Usually there's a lot of regret because I'm snapping at them and losing my temper because I'm aware of the schedule.
The family used to live in the Beaches, but lured by a larger home and more space, they moved to Whitby. It means a 3-hour total commute every day, starting with a race to the go station.
It's 16 minutes, and we still have to get down to the 401 park, run.
To find a parking spot, to catch the train. Today, she misses the express, a 15-minute wait that will cost her later on. That delay will mean less time with her sons at the end of the day.
From Monday to Friday, my family sees me for a couple hours, and you don't have live-life balance. And you wonder, you question a lot of things.
Questions Ryan Sim has been trying to answer. The Anglican pastor created an app called Redeem the Commute. It offers marriage, parenting, and spiritual courses.
People can pause, think about bigger questions of life, and we wanted to really help people redeem what feels like waste of time.
The lessons take just 10 minutes. In 2 months, with limited advertising, 400 people are using the app.
I really wanted to help people who are finding the commuting lifestyle really overwhelming.
You could have had a choice.
Gibson says she survives by cherishing moments like one she had with her son last month.
My 10-year-old comes running down the stairs and he climbs on my lap. And he said, Mommy, I miss you and I don't want you to go to work today.
Faced with the car, train, and eventually the subway, that time, she chose family.
Those cuddles are few and far between, especially with a boy. So I chose to do the cuddle. And I missed the train. But it was totally worth it.
She did the math and calculated that it takes her about a month a year to be commuting. So how can transit planners give her more time? Well, coming up in part three of our series tomorrow, we'll look at how advancements in technology that we already have could get everyone home a little faster. Reporting live, I'm Stephen D'Souza.
Thank you, Stephen.
All right, so that's a little bit of what I'm up to. And it's kind of a new idea. It's been described with various words. People say, oh, that's really cutting edge, it's innovative. People love, you know, obviously that it uses technology in an interesting way, but it always kind of bugs me when that's what they say, because it's not something that we're doing to be cutting edge or to you know, I remember somebody saying, I want to bring my church into the 21st century. And that's not really a good goal. And I love that Bishop Cray quoted Alan Hirsch a couple days ago. I think it was the first day of the conference. And he said, when dealing with discipleship and the related capacity to generate authentic followers of Jesus, we are dealing with that single most crucial factor that will in the end determine the quality of the whole. If we fail at this point, we must fail in the others. So even if I design the best app with the coolest look to it, and it's fast and technologically exciting, there's really no point if it's not set up to make disciples. And so that's what I'm going to focus on in this workshop, is not so much on the technology itself. This is not a how to use Facebook. I will mention Facebook, but that changes all the time, and there are always great ways to learn that outside of this setting. What I want to talk about is disciple-making, using technology as a medium. We have a message, and technology is one way to get a message out there, and that's kind of how I'm going to focus on this. Thinking about a process to follow, thinking through what our message is, who we're trying to share it with, and what's going to be the best vehicle for that. And I'll give you, hopefully, if I don't go over, a little bit of time at the end to practice that a little bit, just to dream about what that could look like in your community. What is our message? It's the gospel. You're all here at a churchy conference, so I probably don't need to tell you, but I usually like to use N.T. Wright's five-act play. Some people expanded it to six. I usually use that to say that we were created to know God and be known by God in a close personal relationship, one that we turned our backs on, turned away from God, rebelled against Him, and there's been a separation between us ever since. That no matter how hard we've tried to bridge that, even with God's help from afar, we haven't been able to make our way back to God. So God came to us. Jesus dying on the cross, rising again, destroying sin and death's power to keep us apart, inviting us to join Him as we move towards the happy ending that looks an awful lot like the beginning. That's how I like to tell the story, but I think we just need to kind of recognize that our message is the gospel. We can often get confused about that in church land and think our message is that we have this weekly event on Sunday morning that you're really supposed to be coming to. Or that we have a great potluck or a great strawberry social. Sometimes those are good vehicles for sharing the gospel, but sometimes not. And so I want to think about some things through that lens of this is our message. Let's focus on the best ways to communicate it. What we're probably accustomed to is an attractional model of church that says, come to us and we'll tell you about the gospel. For a long time, that made a lot of sense. Church building, or at least the church's institutions, would be the center of a community and would have influence over other aspects of the community as well, schools or hospitals and things like that. And the gospel was something shared by an institution or by a building or by a person in that building or by that community gathered together and would say, come and learn about the gospel. We're pretty familiar with that, and maybe you know Back to Church Sunday. That's a classic model of attractional church, and we still need that today. We've got many attractional churches that are strong or that need strengthening, and there is a percentage of the population, as Bishop Cray said, that are de-churched. They've got experience with church. They know what we're talking about. They kind of know what to do. We can invite them back. That's important. There's a slightly different model of church that says we're going to be engaged in our community. Oh, sorry. Yes? I'm blocking the screen myself. Okay. Like that. Got it. Thank you. So a slightly different model of church would be a little more engaged with the community and say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go to the community, talk about the gospel, share it with people, and then invite them to come back. to church. So a great example of this would be my friend who does God at the Pub in the West End of Toronto. Does the Alpha course and his own course. He kind of alternates which one he does at different times of the year. I went once, and it was a great setting. There was dinner, and he would present these courses in a really winsome way. And I asked him once, you know, okay, so who's here? You know, who's new? And he'd say, well, that person started coming to the church, and they came to this course, and that person too. And there were only a couple people who'd never been to the church before or who hadn't just started as a result. So clearly, church wasn't going to happen in the pub. This was kind of an entry door to church. And it was good that they went and did that. And that's a good and laudable way of doing ministry as well. But here at a church planting conference, we talk a lot about being a missional church. It says, we're going to go, and then we're going to become church where we've met people. So that's a missional model of church. And there's a process that I know Bishop Cray has had on the screen, the formative journey of fresh expressions, that I find really helpful in imagining what a missional form of church looks like. And it starts with listening to people, and it moves towards us actually speaking and doing things. So from left to right, you're going from listening to doing. And it starts with listening to what people's needs are. Trying to learn about a community or a people group and trying to learn from them what's missing in life, what's difficult, and considering if there might be ways that Christians can serve those needs. We want to start there. We want to serve needs in a way that doesn't just throw a sandwich at somebody, but says we're going to build community that actually allows people to meet one another more than once, allows them to get to know one another, build some relationships, where there's potential for discipleship, where we can actually talk about real life, where it's not all just chit-chat, you know, surface stuff, but there's potential to talk about real life, to go a little bit deeper, and as we do that, following Jesus naturally transforms and challenges the way we live life. And when we put a follower of Jesus and somebody who's not in the same room together enough times, and they get talking about real life, discipleship naturally comes up. When people do become followers of Jesus, it becomes natural to want to worship him as Lord. If you're following him because he's Lord, then it makes sense to worship as a community who've been discipled together because they've had some needs served. So that's kind of the process that we follow. And most people think of it as working the opposite way. Most people, when they hear I'm a church planter, they think that what I'm doing is I'm starting a church service in hopes that some people will come, and I'll try to teach them about Jesus when they do, so they become disciples. We'll try to have some fellowship so they get to know each other, coffee after the service. And then we'll try to get them to go out into the community and help people. It's hard enough in an established church to do that, right? You all know that. So imagine trying to do that from nothing. We're going to have the best worship service that everybody comes to where they learn about Jesus, lives are transformed. It's hard. What Fresh Expressions of Church are all about is moving through the process this way. And Redeem the Commute is an attempt to do that. You've learned about it a bit from that video, and you could see from Sean's life that it's a busy lifestyle. People commute 1 to 4 hours a day who live in Ajax. They're typically smartphone users. It's one of the things I learned from listening and looking at some demographics and things like that. It's what they do on the train. They're not praying. Their heads are down looking at a smartphone. I'm hoping they'll start praying with the smartphone, but that's not another story. It is my story. They're concerned about priorities in life. We did a demographic study, and we got to see what people value. And there are all sorts of statements, and we find out what percentage of them agree with the statement or not. And one of the things I kept seeing over and over again was people were worried about priorities. My priorities with money are wrong. I'm not happy with the way we're spending our money or in debt. Kept seeing time. Time is prioritized wrong. I just don't have enough time at home. I never see my kids. Weekend is the only time I get with them. So people were saying something wrong, but nobody seemed to be able to figure out a way out, right? You know, Sean tells you, I have no time with my kids. I commute 3 hours a day. It takes a month a year, but she's still doing it. it's kind of hard to get out of that cycle. You live in the burbs because you can afford to live there with a family, and it's hard to imagine how you'd get away from that commuting lifestyle without getting more debt. It's just a cycle of life people get caught in. So you know, started to hear some needs there. People have the, you know, their family lives are pressurized because of this, relationships, and certainly it's incompatible with models of church as we know it. If you're already a follower of Jesus, that's great. You know about what it's like to get up Sunday morning and trundle the family off to church. You prioritize things in your life, and a follower of Jesus does that. But if you aren't a follower of Jesus, and he hasn't transformed your priorities in life yet, it's a big hurdle to get the family out the door and to church, stick them in a different form of daycare Sunday morning when they've been in daycare all week, so you can learn about Jesus in the first place. If we run an Alpha course on a Thursday night, same story, right? You barely get home, get dinner, get the kids in bed, and then you either have to get a babysitter if you're both going to go to the course, or you're heading off just, you know, one of you to take a course when you've just barely got home from work. So I recognize there's a bit of a disconnect there between things we are used to offering as churches and what people's lifestyle is like. If they're already followers of Jesus, they make it work. But if you're not, then why you don't know what joy there is in having those priorities in life transformed by Jesus. And we wanted to make sure people knew that while they were in the midst of this overwhelming busy commute. So Redeem the Commute, it's a mobile app, offers four courses right now. We partnered with Alpha International to offer their marriage course, their parenting children, and their parenting teenagers courses. They're normally something you do 2 hours a week for 5 to 7 weeks. And they gave us permission to license their material for 2 years and cut it all up into 10-minute chunks with discussion questions each and every day for people to work through. So people can get a sense of what it'd be like to reprioritize those areas of life that are most under pressure from commuting while they're still in the middle of it. They can learn what that looks like with very gentle touches of the gospel peppered throughout their course. Thank you. Is it that I'm actually getting in the way of the projector? Okay, thanks. I only have so much cable here, so I can't get too far, and now Norm can't see anything. Technology, honestly. So now these are things that people probably encounter on their own first, but we want them to build community. So every single day, I feel like I'm telling people in my little intro to each video, share this. If you find this helpful, share it with somebody you know on the train or on the bus or in your carpool. Start listening or watching to these talks together and discussing the discussion question. If it's the marriage course, make sure your spouse is taking the course at the same time as you. So they're watching on their commute or at home or wherever they are. And when you have dinner that night, or once the kids are finally in bed, discuss the question or discuss what you learned today. So it's not without community. In fact, we're hoping that a network of small groups is going to kind of pop up on its own, a scattered church. Remember you heard about gathered and scattered? We're planning to start scattered. And then in about a year, at least, we'll do the gathered thing. But we're starting as a scattered church where people are going to start building those relationships with people they already know, but we want them to go deeper. Start actually talking about marriage, about parenting, about Christianity 101. Our hope is that anybody can benefit from these three courses here, and as they do, they'll get a little tiny bit of an introduction of the gospel. Alpha does that really well through these courses, and the natural follow-up we hope would be something like a Christianity 101 course. We recorded it here at St. Paul's when I was on staff here, and so they moved from the UK to somebody local. Who's teaching the course. So they start to get connected to something local in Durham region, get a sense that this isn't just something that British people do. For those who are already followers of Jesus, or those who we hope and pray, move through a process like this, we have daily challenges that we film every week. These are more of the devotional content that has me, and I finally have a videographer now who helps with that. So this is where we dive more deeply into Scripture and a rhythm of life. You've heard that mentioned a few times as well at the conference, where we try to help people who are in the midst of that crazy lifestyle start living with a rhythm. I'll tell you about that in a second here. Here's how we envision making disciples through Christianity 101 and through these daily challenges. Right now, we're focused on the Sermon on the Mount. And the idea is every Monday, we introduce a new idea. Every Tuesday, we study it in Scripture. Every Wednesday, we consider how it affects our lives. It's kind of the turning point in our thinking. Every Thursday, we act on it, try to actually start living it out. Friday, we reflect and pray. Saturday, take it easy. Sunday is a day for community. We always kind of give people the heads up. And we're going to be starting a new Christian community in Ajax in about a year's time. Get in touch with me if you want to know. We're going to start developing a team out of that so that all these networks of small groups that start, just with people sharing good stuff with their friends, centered around good content, can come together for a great celebration of what we started. Let's all meet each other. We'll have a great big celebration. That's the beginning of our corporate identity, and we're on our way to a church. Start meeting every month. Maybe we should do this every 2 weeks. Maybe every week, why not Sunday? We start to have that corporate identity, but we never want that to overshadow the daily ongoing rhythm of life that we're trying to foster discipleship through, or the small group community that we hope is forming and multiplying as people on the train overhear the people next to them talking about this stuff, and these groups naturally grow and multiply. So that's a little bit of the process of how we're trying to serve some needs. Let me show you. Serve some needs through courses. Build some community as people form their own groups. Disciple people more deeply through Christianity 101 and through the daily challenges, and move towards celebration as the church matures and includes worship in a corporate setting beyond what we do Friday. I'm going to pause here in case you have any questions about what I'm specifically doing. After this, I'm going to move into the more general stuff of how can we envision moving through a similar process in our own settings using different media or technology that fit different audiences. But just about this. First of all, Joan. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, the process behind it. As with all fresh expressions, we tend to notice the context and what fit that context, but underneath it is a process. So messy church is the classic example. Lots of people do messy church, and it's a problem when they haven't thought through that process of, is this actually the right fit for this community? It's wide open, so anybody can use it. There are lots of spin-off effects. There have been people around the world who've found it, I don't know how, and started using it. We have over 500 people who've installed it on a device, an Android, iPhone, or iPad. Redeemthecommute.com. Yep. You'll find it all there. So absolutely, there are spin-off effects to this. There are other people using it, but the point is to establish a local Christian community. We're not doing a virtual church where people never meet face-to-face or anything like that. This is meant to foster face-to-face community with depth. People might use it in other ways. I know somebody used it for a confirmation class. That's all good. Ajax is the perfect test case. We've got 82% of those who work and live in Ajax work outside of Ajax. So we were, if there was ever a place with the vast majority of people commuting, this is it. So this is our test case. And that's why I'm so focused there, to see if we can work through this process. Is it a model that could be used elsewhere? Yep, with the right conditions. But it might be totally wrong for your context. So we got to look at context. Duke? Good idea. I've had a couple times where somebody says, "Hey, you're the Redeem the Commute guy." So those are encouraging. Somebody I saw recently said, "Hey, you're the Redeem the Commute guy. Start every morning with you." Never met the guy. So that's a good sign that people who I've never heard of are actually using the thing. I have statistics. You know, I've got what they call the metrics. Overall numbers of who's from what country, what city, and things like that, and the vast majority are Canadian, vast majority are local. That's the only place we advertise, so I'm not surprised, although there will always be the spin-off effects. So I get the big metrics, but there are opportunities for people to actually sign up. If they want to track their progress through the app, they need to create an account. And so I've got about 70 people now who've created accounts. They've given me their name and email address, and right now I'm going to start connecting with them one-on-one, trying to build up some of those groups, encouraging them to share it, getting to know who they are, and starting to form our team out of that. Yep. I knew there was somebody over here.
Can you say a bit more about the way groups are being formed amongst these folks? Is this chat room groups? Is this how are groups being formed?
Sure. There is opportunity to leave a comment or ask a question online, but we're not expecting community to form like that. People just see a few names here and there. We're asking people basically to share this content with people in their life. So it's not really so much about connecting with people you know, you've never met. Basically, if you're finding this parenting course helpful, maybe your neighbors would too. So people's networks that already exist are being leveraged to make disciples. We want them to share it. And so as they do that, they're going to be in community together. And it's not without without good good gospel-centered content at the core. It's like any small group. There's something there. There's a structure. And as those groups identify themselves to me, I'll be providing coaching to them as well, to their leaders. So they're connected as part of a whole, especially once we get our corporate identity in a year or so. One more. Simon. Sorry, Vickers, you're too. Split second
sorry.
After.
Yeah, sorry about that. Could you just say something about the tension between engaged discipleship and the reality of a sort of meeting consumers where they're at? Because you're talking about a transition out of that. In our context, we found people are really interested in courses. And then when it comes time to take a more active participation, that transition sometimes isn't there.
Yeah. It's all kind of in that process, that there's momentum to this. If all I wanted to do was get a bunch of people to notice that this existed and maybe to take a course, I'd be really, really happy right now, but I'm not. Because this is just the first step. And I often talk about it like a road. There's a long road with lots of stops on it, from, you know, like people just finding the thing to using it more than once, to using it regularly, to actually sharing it with somebody they know, to actually exploring what it means to be a follower of Jesus, to being one, to actually being part of a community that worships together. So that's a long road, and there are a lot of off-ramps where people are going to take off, and that's okay. There are in our more conventional church models as well. So the idea is that there's a process here, and it's not a process that when they get to a certain point, they realize this wasn't real church and they're supposed to be over here. So you took a course, now we want you to be on the hospitality committee. This is something where it grows with them. So you took a course, that was interesting. What's behind it? Christian faith. I'll explore that now. Okay, I might want to actually try to follow Jesus. How do I do that in this crazy lifestyle? Well, the daily challenges walk me through that. And it's all built around that. That's the teaching content. That's what all our groups are meant to be walking through. So it's the intentionality that hopefully gives it some momentum. We have to see. We're like at the first stop on that road. So, yeah. All right. I do want to talk through the process and to try to help you. I'm gonna do a quick scan of technology to consider what might be a good fit for your community and the people you're trying to reach with the gospel. And I want us to think first about audience. Who is our audience? To use the kind of technology or communications term, they probably are an audience to start, right? My people are. They're just going to watch something first. They probably come at it as a consumer. They think they're going to consume something, and we certainly are hoping that they will join us in a process that leads them from consumer to disciple. So who's our audience? I'm sure you all say everyone, especially if you're Anglican, right? You have that sense of, well, if you live in my parish boundaries and you're not something else, then you're mine. And that's great. We do have to have that vision that the gospel is for everyone, and we shouldn't rest until it is. But we'll just start with one, okay? Just start with one. One group in your community who are not members of any Christian church. I'm going to have you work through this with the people at your table. I want you to talk through who is the typical person in your neighborhood who's not part of any Christian church. Try to walk through their day. If they're a commuter, I know what their day is like, but think of the people in your neighborhood. What's their day like? Where do they need help with that in their day, in their week? And what technology or media do they encounter as they live that life? So I'm going to give you about 10 minutes to work through that as a table, and I'll leave the questions up there for you. All right, I'm going to bring us back together here. You might be itching to hear about technology and thinking, why doesn't he just get to it? But I really want to keep the emphasis on this kind of process that starts with the listening and understanding of people. You're just kind of playing around with it here. What's really best is to go through an intentional time of listening and learning without any preconceived notion of what you're going to do or what you have the resources to do or not, but to just really spend some time listening, learning, praying, trying to discern where God's calling you. To engage with your community, and then to figure out, can we do it? What resources would we need? What people would we need? Sure. I'll refer to precedent, too. I did a workshop last year on missional listening that would be available on freshexpressions.ca. Nick Brotherwood and I partnered together for that one. So we go through it in a lot more detail there. But typically for me, a missional listening process, which I've done 3 times now, once in a rural parish, once here at St. Paul's, and once in Ajax, involves demographic study, whether it's a paid full-out demographic study or just finding Statistics Canada data and looking through what resources local organizations have produced. The United Way did a study of youth in this neighborhood or things like that. So just looking for documentation, spending time in the community, just watching, listening, trying to learn people's patterns, people's lifestyles. I used to hang around here the beginning and end of the day so I could see when people were coming home from work or not, what they were carrying with them, whether they were in a hurry or not. We learned a lot about this neighborhood by learning what people's patterns were like in a day. Asking people, doing surveys, interviews, sit next to somebody at Starbucks, and would you be willing to answer some questions for me? I'm doing a community survey. Sure, they'll tell you lots. Doing quick little surveys of people on the street. I have a 2-question survey. It'll take 30 seconds. Will you help me? Sure. So information gathering like that, What else? What other good missional listening is there? Anybody else have an idea?
Does anybody have any ideas about places where people are never on duty?
Never. Always in vehicles. Always in vehicles, yeah. Okay. That's how would you learn about them, or how would you communicate with them?
The former person and the
last. Sure. The former, how would you learn about them? Any ideas?
There is no Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, you get them at a drive-through line. Yeah. Do the squeegee kid thing. Yeah. Yeah. Let's think through that one. I don't have an immediate answer, but we'll have a chance to think through a little bit more in my last exercise, a specific question like that for your audience. So maybe your table can try to work that through. One more question there. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yep, you can get traffic studies as well of traffic patterns through a community. Do they go east, west, north, south? Where are people headed usually? Out of town or in town? There'll be people with studies on that at your town's planning department. Yeah. Great stuff. So thinking through the mediums, sometimes we get nervous about whether we're allowed to communicate the gospel through different media. But it's happened over time. I think of the ways God has communicated through different biblical figures. Moses and his stone tablets, right? God communicating to the whole nation using pillars of fire and smoke. God is a multimedia kind of guy. Jesus himself, well, the incarnation is a divine act of translation, translating the immortal, invisible God into an incarnate one who we could have breakfast with. He used speech in a particular language, used parables. When the crowd got too big, he got in a boat so he could speak to people. Kind of doing whatever it takes to communicate with us, an alienated people. Paul used his letters, his epistles, and they were able to get as far as they did because of the Roman roads. Luther, printing press, C.S. Lewis used the radio, Billy Graham used the television and the stadium. So there's a great precedent for this. And I liked learning about C.S. Lewis, with his radio ministry that eventually went into print with things like Mere Christianity. When he started that radio broadcast, he started with a big focus on natural law, and some people wondered why he did that, why he didn't just kind of start in with the story of Jesus or something like that. And when he was asked about that, he said he thought the audience of his day was so lacking in their knowledge of the Bible. This is a while ago, right? They were already so lacking of knowledge of the Bible that they didn't believe in the assumptions the Bible made about things like morality. So he decided he had to make sure there was an understanding of a universal concept of right and wrong. Once that truth was established, he could deal with all that came from that. People not living up to that standard from where such a standard originated. And that's where the trajectory of something like Mere Christianity went. So there's an example of somebody quite famously knowing his audience and shaping his way of communicating the gospel for them to have the best chance of hearing it. So the gospel content itself, the kernel of the gospel, people call the kerygma, it doesn't change, but that drives what language we'll use, what starting point we'll use, what media we'll use. I'm going to kind of go through some technology, starting with, this will just be kind of an easy one because we all understand and know billboards, even though we probably aren't going to use them, unless you're dealing with drivers. But hey, billboards are something, if we think through, who's the audience? Drivers. What's the style? It's got to be short and surprising because you don't get a lot of time. So, there's a church in New Zealand that does these crazy billboards that shock people sometimes. Virgin Mary with her pregnancy test there. She looks shocked herself. So it's got to be something like that shocks people, surprises people into, wow, maybe that church isn't what I expected. The pros are it's got a broad reach, and you can target a particular location. The cons are you get so little time for them to see it and absorb it, and it's pretty expensive. But we're going to think through the breadth of technology that's out there to communicate something. Newspapers. Audience drivers? That's wrong. Your audience are going to be the kind of people who read print newspapers. If it's something like the, and you've got to know who that is for each audience, right? Because each newspaper caters to a slightly different kind of person. The commuters in Toronto are going to read Metro. But there's a whole different audience for something like the Globe and Mail versus the National Post. The readership is going to vary, and readership is typically trending towards older adults, and as younger people read their news, including newspaper-generated news, on electronic devices. So a newspaper is going to get an older audience, more so, and the style, if you're going to have an advertisement, it's got to, again, be kind of short and surprising because it's going to get lost otherwise. And it's got to, this looks suspiciously like the billboard slide, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Other than the picture and the title. So just ignore some of that. It does have a fairly broad reach within its particular niche, and you can target a location as well. Short exposure, high cost. That's billboards. Forget newspapers. Direct mail. Mailing something that goes into people's mailboxes. Who are you going to get? Basically anybody with mail service. That's a lot of people. It's got to be very visual. And the pros are that you can target a neighborhood. It's not that expensive to do a direct mail campaign. The problem is lots of people are going to throw them away the minute they get it. They won't even read it. So you've got to be prepared for a very small percentage of people to even read the thing, much less respond to it. People like to say this is like less than 2% that are actually going to engage with your direct mail. So a lot of money for a few people. Yep. There you go. That's yep. You've got to think through your message. Am I advertising an organization or institution, or am I advertising a felt need that's going to be served through this organization? Yep, that kind of thing. Really? Okay. Noticed a lot of gyms sending me mail in January, so they know that too. Other reasons, though. Handing things out. This is something we did with Redeem the Commute. Handed out cards at the GO station. Your audience are going to be pedestrians, kind of people you can hand something to. It's quick, but at least there's some personal connection there. They saw somebody, and they got a read on who that person was, and it tells them something. So it's not just direct mail. There was a brief moment of contact there. You can do this fairly cheaply. Something like postcards are around 10 cents a person, 10 cents a card. Again, you can target a location. There's a bit of a personal connection, but the downside is lots of our cards end up on the train platform. We go and clean them up, and you also need permission to do this unless it's on your own land. And chances are you're not dealing with the high pedestrian traffic on your land. So you got to think through those issues as well. And one bit of technology that we're using on our cards are QR codes. This crazy black and white thing. These are readable by a mobile phone, leads them directly to a website. And in terms of its style and stuff, it is kind of cutting edge. When people see it, they know that technology is being used here, and it can surprise people. Wow, the church is using that. The other pros are it provides a direct link to something. When somebody scans that code, they don't have to type it in properly. They don't have to know how to spell redeem. They just scan it, and it goes direct, and you can track those things. So I don't send them to redeemthecommute.com. That's not what's embedded in there. It's called a bit.ly link, bit.ly, that I can track how many people scanned it to come to our website, because it records that before it refers them. The cons are that not many people use them yet. Might grow, it might not. But at least it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to generate a QR code and embed something in there. And I gave an example there of a website that would do that. You do not need to pay for it. They'll happily sell you all sorts of extra services. Get a t-shirt with your QR code on it. Just generate the thing and download it. It's free. Use a trusted website. Don't just Google, generate QR code and use the first thing that comes up, because sometimes they will be putting a buffer in there so it comes to their advertising page first and then refers them to your web page. So you want to make sure it's a real direct link. Test it out before you print it. The other thing that QR codes can do is alienate non-mobile users, because they just don't know what it is. And they think they, and so if this is advertising that's going to reach a broad audience of mobile users and everyone else, sometimes you're gonna just turn them off. They look at it and they say, this is clearly not for me, because I don't know what that little maze is. The other reason to use something like bit.ly if you're going to make a QR code is that it makes a very short URL, and so it makes for a nicer looking code. If what you put in here is www.stwithinsontheswamp.com/this/that.html, it's going to be a really complex code with a lot of little dots on it, harder to scan, and it just doesn't look nice. So use a short URL if you're going to create QR codes. There are churches that use these in their bulletins, too. So if you're telling people about a certain event, you've got a QR code that leads them to that specific page on your website if they scan it. Is it necessary? Not necessarily, but in some settings with certain churches that target people who are mobile users or likely to be, then it can be a little time saver for them, and it might drive them to the website to sign up for something when they wouldn't have bothered punching in a long URL otherwise on their phone. So that's what QR codes are all about. Now, all those things can be used to drive traffic to your website. Whatever advertising you might use, whatever technology you might use outside of a website, it can drive people to your website, which is easily managed. That's the big plus about a website. You control how it looks. You control what content is up there. It's fully managed. You might give people an opportunity to feedback and ask a question and all that, but it's still your domain. You get to control it. Different from social media. Social media you don't get to control as nicely. So you still need a website in this age of social media, I think. Don't pour the resources into it that you might have years ago, because it's becoming less and less important with the advent of social media, though you still do need it. The pros are obviously the high control. The cons are that it gets out of date quickly. So you've got to have somebody watching it. I still find church websites with last year's Easter services listed. So I'm not kidding. So don't put it on there if you're not willing to remove it when the event is over. It's a pull technology, so you don't get to push anything at anyone, except maybe just through a feed that they still had to subscribe to. It's something you've got to advertise and get them to go to it, or they have to have searched for it. So it requires action on the part of the user. It can be kind of impersonal, and as people use mobile devices more and more and more and more to access the web, if you've got a really nicely designed website for a screen this size, it might look terrible on a screen this size. So those are some of the cons of websites these days. It's important to build a website on a content management system. If somebody wants to hand code and program a website for you today, and they're not building in a system where you can update things on your own, run away fast. It needs to be built on a content management system like WordPress, or I hate Joomla, but lots of people use it, or Drupal is another one, or you can get things like Church CMS that is specifically designed for churches. I'm a big fan of WordPress, that's why it's there first, and with WordPress you can buy or get for free plugins for your website that will manage sermons, that will manage an event calendar. So you can build a good church website off of WordPress without knowing any programming. You can just add these plugins and arrange, using the menu system they've got, you can arrange where things are going to go and use a theme to design what it's going to look like. There's Redeem the Commute's webpage. Yeah, Andy. Yeah. Yeah. Used to be you would. You would design two different websites, but today you can get things like a responsive theme. So that's redeemthecommute.com on a desktop computer. iPad looks pretty similar, but if you do it on an iPhone, it looks like this. So I'm using a theme that's responsive. So if you want to be ready for mobile, look for themes or WordPress, or whatever you're using, look for a design, a theme, that calls itself responsive, because it's going to adapt. You see there's just three across here now, rather than four. The text is bigger and readable. It's not expecting it to be wide. It's expecting it to be narrow like this. And you know, these menu buttons are below the title now, rather than beside it. It's done all that on its own. I didn't program it to do that. Yeah? Dial up. Yeah, thanks. Yes, one more. WordPress is free. It can be a little confusing. There are two things called WordPress, WordPress.com and WordPress.org. WordPress.com is a blogging platform where if you just want to start a blog, you go there and you set it up for free. But it's WordPress.com/something. It's not your web page. It's just a blog. It might be an easy way to get started if you're really, really not wanting to set something up of your own with its own name. If you want to set up a proper web page, use plugins and things like that, then you'll use WordPress.org, which is a downloadable bit of software that you install on a server that you've paid monthly hosting on. So you're going to need to pay for a web host and a domain name, something.com, .net, or .ca. WordPress is something you can download and install for free. It's open source, and that's why people can design plugins for it, because it's fully open source. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'll repeat what he said. He was just saying, with their WordPress installation, they have multiple users where the youth pastor can manage the youth section of the page. Various staff have different responsibilities for different sections, and they can all update things without breaking the whole website. I know I'm going to run out of time. I always do. So I'm going to move us along. Blogs are an easy way to journal and write regular articles. You can embed that in your website, or you can just set up a separate blog on WordPress.com or Blogger, things like that, where it's just your place to journal. The pro there is that people can subscribe to it, and they get the updates every time you do them. Videos, same idea. You can produce daily, weekly, monthly videos. It's what I do. It takes a lot of time and skill and technology to do that, but it's a way to communicate with people who are more visual and it can be a little more personal because there's a face and a personality showing through. Duke, yeah? That's right. You've always got to look at the licensing. Look for anything with Creative Commons. If it says it's licensed through Creative Commons, then you're able to use it under certain conditions, and it'll list those conditions. If you have to give attribution, if it's for non-commercial use only, if you're allowed to change it before you use it, always look for stuff that's got Creative Commons on it. There's a lot out there, a lot of images and things like that, and it does happen. Freshexpressions.ca, we had an image that we didn't have licensed. I didn't know it was there until the photographer alerted us to it, having been used in somebody's article. So, yep, they're out there looking, protecting their copyright. So don't play games, you get in trouble. Yes, Anna, and then I'm going to move on. Yeah, same process as using music. And you are not allowed to broadcast on the web your music from church unless you have a web broadcast license. It's just because you performed it doesn't mean you own it. So you have a license with CCLI to perform it in church, not to broadcast it. So this has got to be your own original content that you create. Whoa. I'm going to skip that. That was going to be one of my videos. Podcast, same idea, but audio only. Mobile device users mostly use podcasts. The style is quite narrative, and lots of people subscribe to them, listen to them on the subway, train, wherever they are. And again, it just takes some time to do that well. All our videos are also converted to audio for podcast users. Now, social media, like I said, involves a shift in how people communicate. We're used to, as churches, broadcasting things. We control our message, how we print it, how we say it, what the sign says, things like that. The internet changed that a little bit. People could easily talk back to us, but social media changes things even more because people can talk to each other, and that's what social media is all about. And the church can even be left out of the conversation. If you're not on social media, people may be talking about you. So I'd recommend you be on social media in some way. Twitter's a medium for very short bursts of communications, less than 140 characters, but that are easily... That trend easily, because you can attach little hashtags to it to show what topic you're talking about, and people might be searching for those hashtags. And so it's easy for something you say to go viral. It's easy for people to repeat it, and people have very few privacy restrictions on Twitter. So Twitter's short, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing, and it trends easily. So if you've got a great message that people might want to pass on, Twitter's the way to do it. Facebook is very tight privacy. People should have better privacy controls on Facebook than Twitter, which means things don't really go viral as easily. You know, somebody posted a photo yesterday of the conference, Sean, and I wanted to share it, but I couldn't because his privacy settings meant it wasn't shareable beyond his network. Yep. Yeah. I am. But that's the thing with Facebook. But what you have on Facebook are most people in your community who are on social media are going to be on Facebook. So if it's probably the best place to invest your time as a church. On my website, when I post my notes, you will find my suggested set of strategy for different sizes of churches and how you might use Facebook because Twitter a little bit, but mostly Facebook, because that's the best place to invest your time. But I don't want small churches to overreach too much. And as churches get bigger, I think different levels of engagement on social media are sustainable. And I know that from having tried things here at St. Paul's, which is a big church, and still being surprised at how hard it was to get the critical mass, to really get discussion going, to really have an event listed on Facebook that doesn't look sad. When, you know, like 3 people say they're going, and you really know 100 people will be there, but only 3 of them signed up on Facebook, so you really shouldn't have listed the event in the first place, because now it just looks sad. So you'll find my strategy stuff there for different sizes of churches. Facebook ads are a great tool. I'd encourage you to explore it. Even if you don't sign up and pay for anything, you can get great demographics from trying to create a Facebook ad. On Facebook, top right corner, click the little menu, go to create an advert or create an ad, and go through and say, you know what, I want to target mobile users age 30 to 40, female in Ajax. I just got a number for how many there are. It tells you how many people will be targeted by that ad. That's not all of them. Not everybody's on Facebook. But it gives you a sense of percentages. Well, how many of those would be males instead? Oh, okay, I've got... You get a sense of proportions. And it's a really easy way, and a lot of Christian organizations have just started using Facebook ads. All of a sudden, like, the right side of my screen on Facebook is full of Christian stuff. If you love Jesus, click like. There are like three of them popping up at the same time now who all want me to click if I like Jesus. So I like Jesus, but I'm not going to click it. But here's an example of a Facebook ad that I run. Marriage course on the go. I didn't capitalize go, so I'm not, it's nobody's trademark. I just mean on the move, not the go train. I have a little image there. It's too small, really. It should be bigger. And you get a couple, maybe a sentence or two to catch people's attention. And the greatest thing about Facebook is they will see if they know somebody who likes Redeem the Commute. And so I can target ads to friends of people who like Redeem the Commute. And they will see that their friend is using it, and that their trust level is immediately going to go up. And they might ask that person. So it's a great way to build relationships, and one of the best tools is to do that kind of targeting. Target people who like your church and their friends. And their friends will see that name pop up. And it's one of Facebook's biggest strengths, even though it's a little creepy. There are other social media networks out there, like LinkedIn for professionals, like Pinterest, which, hate to say it, is for women. It's like 90-something percent women. I got on there, and a friend joked with me that it was for people planning a wedding. And I thought she was kidding, but I don't use it anymore. So, you know what? But if you're targeting these groups, professionals or women who are very visual, and there are churches who are actively trying to figure out how to use those platforms to communicate the gospel and what they're doing about the gospel. Oh, dear. I always run out of time. Mobile apps. The other thing I want to mention is there are church social media platforms out there. You might want to explore them. Things like the Table Project, which is free and now available in Canada when it never was. This is going to be one of the better ways to help manage discipleship for people. Something like the Table Project or the City or So Church. Basically, people sign up for your little internal social network. They can get communications and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot like Facebook, but you can also walk them through a process of discipleship. So, your course is, you've got a little course online, and here are your steps, complete these units. You can have all that in there, and statistics on who's doing it. And so the real pros are it's closed and safe for people to share prayer requests within small groups or within ministry teams. People can sign up for ministry teams. We used to use it at Reconnect when I was leading a church plant here called Reconnect. We would have people sign up to serve coffee or whatever. They just check a box and they'd be on a shift. It's a great tool for that kind of thing. The cons are the cost. If you're using something like the City or So Church, they cost money. You need a critical mass to make it worthwhile. And the other con, I think, would be that it is closed. And so it's not like Facebook or Twitter where things are going to spread on their own. It's more for the internal church environment, but it can be a good tool for discipleship. I do have a video describing that, but I've run out of time, so it'll be on my website again describing what the City is all about, because that's the one I'm most familiar with. Okay, I want you to just take a couple minutes, even though we're just a bit out of time here, just chat at your tables, because lunch is going to be here anyway, so you're in a good place. So just while you wait for lunch to get set up, dream and plan about this. Take that audience you were talking about. How can you or your church help your audience with one of those needs that you discussed? Oh, and Jenny says we have 5 minutes, so that's even better. No. It took me 3 minutes to say that? Ah. Lunch is in here anyway, Jenny, so I was saying they should just park themselves if they're smart. So how can you and your church help with one of those needs that you've discerned there? Just dream. What help could you provide? What technology or medium would help you communicate that best? And who can help you with this? Is there a 12-year-old kid in your parish who's a whiz with this kind of stuff? So just dream a little bit, share your ideas, and maybe go home and actually live the dream. I'm going to say bye now. Thank you.